So anyway, sorry I'm late. I had to get a mouse out of my mom's box.
You've been waiting so long to say that.
I was going to lead with that while I got on the call, but you were talking about things.
I'm sorry, I should stop talking about things.
Podcasts, the final frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
With XV.
Tasha Yar came from a completely failed colony. There were high five gangs.
Hey, Mickey.
Screw your culture.
Ken.
Oh, God, my head. I hate time travel.
And Fort Max.
Are you a Vulcan?
So on this episode of That One Episode, we're doing Deep Space Nine, Season 3, Episode 9, Defiant. One of my favorites. Although,
you can start out with the log and the stardate.
Eh.
That's against regulation.
Oh, fine. You do one then.
I'm not the captain. I'm in charge of 10 forward.
You would be.
Yeah. I was going to protest I am not a merry man, but... Wrong episode.
Yes.
No, I kind of like it as an opening on this episode of That One Episode.
So that one, yeah, that's pretty good.
There is something to that, you have to admit. Besides, with new intro we have, I don't think the log thing just doesn't... It's too much. It's too much all at once.
Yeah. Last week we discussed one of the worst episodes in the entire franchise.
Like I said, Defiant's one of my favorite episodes from Deep Space Nine, but to be fair, most episodes from Deep Space Nine are my favorite episode of Deep Space Nine.
So long as they're not in Season 1.
Or some of Season 7.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point in the future, too.
Yes, I'm sure.
Ken, does the story you have, fit organically in the process of the episode somewhere, or...
I was about to go over it real quickly. Okay, so about 2 years ago, I was actually watching through all of DS9. I was enjoying myself going through it.
Gross.
Then I hit Defiant, watched Defiant. Then, for some reason, I decided to watch Wrath of Khan. Good. Everything's good. How's it? I'm totally getting to Star Trek again. The next day, I went to see Into Darkness.
Oh. Bless your heart.
And this reminded me. And so, when I loaded up Netflix, it reminded me. I didn't continue watching DS9 after that. In fact, before last week, I had not watched a single Star Trek episode in over 2 years. Into Darkness is that bad. It is bad enough to ruin everything.
It is
a really big reminder because, Netflix still tracks all that shit. It's actually very good about keeping up with what you have watched even years ago. So I looked at that, and I saw that Defiant was the last episode I watched, and I was like, oh, now I remember.
To this day, I still have not watched Into Darkness.
God, don't.
We'll have to correct.
Yeah. Yes, we can make him suffer through it.
Here's the best way to put Into Darkness. It's not boring like Nemesis is, but it's every bit as bad and eye-rolly and cliche.
It might be worse, actually.
It telegraphs every single homage in it with the gentleness of a sledgehammer to your forebrain.
I think it is the worst Star Trek movie. I can at least pull something out of the other one.
I don't know. The motion picture still exists.
The motion picture
of it.
Probably what kept us from getting a second Flash Gordon movie.
I thought the first Flash Gordon movie did that.
But no.
By what? By being awesome?
No, don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm not really entertained by that Flash Gordon movie, but I can see how after that happened, nobody would want to touch it again.
Yeah. Well, it came out like within a week of the motion picture, so that's kind of what happened to it. It did very well in places that it didn't come out within a week of
it did
the
very well in
picture.
Places it didn't come out.
It's kind of like Speed Racer, where it's a very specialized movie that appeals to a very specific audience, and then they release it right next to The Dark Knight.
Yeah. But no, I just want, since it didn't come up, and it will come up at least once or twice more, Into Darkness is just really bad. It is like I'm almost surprised it did not kill the franchise again. Bad.
No, the
Are
next
you
one
sure
will do
it
that.
Didn't?
No, because they're making another movie.
That one will not dead on its feet.
That one will be blamed for killing the franchise.
Yeah, unfortunately, because it's more Orsi and Kurtzman's fault, and Abrams. I think Abrams just did not really want to make a Star Trek movie. He just had to.
Perhaps.
Well, maybe for lucky, Abrams will kill Star Wars.
No, it won't happen. No matter how bad the prequels approved, no matter how bad a Star Wars movie is, it'll make money for days.
Besides,
I'm just so tired of Star Wars. Why won't it go away?
Besides,
well, prepare for one every year now.
Besides, Disney owns it, so no matter how bad it does, they're still going to keep putting their money into it because they won't notice it missing.
Yeah, it's one thing if it's a quote-unquote new
property. It's just like, keep this franchise alive. It doesn't matter how much it costs. We have all the money in the world.
Because it's just gonna keep making us more. It's probably made them the $4 billion that they made to spend to buy it already. Just from the licensing and toys and everything.
Mm-hmm. I like Star Wars better when no one liked it.
Okay. You
know, the early 90s.
That's when I got into it.
Well, you know, Mickey, if you feel that way, you could just start liking Phantom Menace.
No.
You thought about it, though.
Well, it'd be fun just to be irritating, but no, I'd rather like something that I actually like.
Yeah. Can you do that to yourself, really?
So we should probably get started talking about the actual episode we're going to talk about on this one episode. So Mickey, why don't you, somebody's volume's kind of high too.
I hear whispering of sexy ladies. Speak up for it, Max.
What?
Okay, so on good old Tarak Nor, Kira has woken up hungover.
Yeah, Kira's just silly.
She's having a very Kira day. Kira time of the month.
You know what? I don't even think it's that. I can relate to her. Just eventually, you know, you don't have a day off after a while. You get stressed. Everybody is asking you for something. You're just like, oh, just fuck
Ken,
you.
Don't apologize for Kira.
Oh, I will. I like Kira.
But, well, I like Kira too, but this one, the reason why she's so fun is that she's not human, she's not Starfleet, therefore she can be flawed.
Yeah,
she can be a raging bitch when she gets tired and has people up her ass that won't leave her the fuck alone.
Yeah, she's just like, she's been like, I've been working for 2 weeks straight, fuck everybody.
And so when she goes down to visit Bashir, and he's like, oh, by the way, I need a space shuttle.
And she's like, fuck you and your space
shuttle. She jumps across the nickel table and slaps him across the face and starts kicking him in the shins.
At least that's what's implied.
I don't even see what the problem is. They have like 20 runabouts. They blow one up every week. Why can't he just take one to Vulcan for a few days?
Now, they're not Delta Flyers. They're not that disposable.
Okay, fine. They blow up a couple every season, but still.
I think this is just like the straw that broke the camel's back. She's like had 15 requests in this day. And she's like, you know what? No.
The other thing I'm thinking here,
I really love Kira so much because she does what we all want to do. No apologies. Just no. Screw you. No. No.
It's like my people will die. Give them a Band-Aid.
Candy's from a cancer ward. I don't care.
And what's bad is that it's not even an exaggeration. Not by much, anyway.
Yeah.
So Bashir climbs down off his high horse to get down on Kira's level and say, "You want what you need? Some booze, some sex, and a glob of shit on a stick. Let's go to Quark's."
It's sugar, you know, basically.
This reminded me that I like Bashir.
He's the best. Really, he is. At everything.
Yes!
Spoilers.
Season 7.
Seven. So that was like season five.
Was it season five? I mean, I fell off the horse. I'm gonna start rewatching it again after this, though.
So, what is a Jamja stick anyway?
They explained this in season one. It's some kind of like tree sap on a stick.
Is it supposed to be like hard? Is it crunchy? Is it gooey? Is it like a marshmallow? Is it cooked?
I think it's like a hard taffy kind of texture, from the way it's looked. Occasionally when it showed up. Like, think about taking a bunch of Starburst and warming them up and sculpting them into something vaguely the shape of a giant phallus and jamming a stick up the end of it. And then letting it cool and set, and that's basically what that is.
It looks like like if you took wild berries and just let them rot in the sun for a while.
For a little while there, I couldn't tell if you were talking about the thing from Star Trek or Jay's hard sap rod.
It's extremely sweet. So just as Kira's about to wrap her lips around her Jamja stick, she hears a sultry voice call up behind her. "I hope you're ready for some fun tonight, because I've got plans for you, baby."
Which is not the exact dialogue, but it's implied.
Yes.
Because it's Riker.
Yeah. It's always implied.
And you can see Kira's cheeks get moist at the sight of Riker. Flushed, not moist. Sorry.
No, that's something else.
So, after the French horns, we rejoin the cast where Riker is talking with Sisko in the office.
See, now, I'm almost, like, half disappointed that, like, Sisko doesn't, like, interview him, just, you know, friendly chat. Was like, "So has Picard, you know, ruined any more families?"
"How's your boss?"
Yeah, it's like, it's the thing's like, I always want more of that. Alas.
"So how's the man that killed my wife?" "Still alive?"
"Damn! No, I guess that just gives him an opportunity, right?"
So, while Sisko caresses his ball and Riker talks about getting drunk and banging whores the last time he was there on the station.
Again, not the exact dialogue, but implied.
Yeah.
Gotta read between the lines to see the real message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what Dax does when she enters the command center.
Yes!
Dax enters. "Yeah. Hey, Kara, what's up?" "Oh, Will's in there." "Will?" "Oh, I mean Commander Riker." "Oh, you two fucked last night, huh?" "No, no."
I love Dax. I love this whole cast, really.
So while Dax continues to make Kira embarrassed about what may or may not have happened last night.
What definitely happened.
It did. Riker comes back out, and Dax reminds him of the money that he owes her from last time. And Riker's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I don't remember you."
You would not believe how drunk I was that night.
I was so drunk.
I would.
I spent so many evenings with lovely ladies that they all run together to me. I am Riker, after all.
Of course. Totally Riker.
Oh, I just thought of something. I want to see Kelsey Grammer play Riker.
Huh. Huh.
I don't know why, but it would be fun.
Hmm.
Weirdly, I can see that somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but...
It could be alternate universe Riker.
It would be an oddly serious Captain Riker.
So as Riker attempts to leave, Kira jumps up and sends her console spinning in circles. "Wait, where are you going? Where are you going? I can give you a tour. You want to see my quarters? Or maybe some... you're not interested in that? Okay. Oh, what about something classified? You want to see the Defiant? I can. Well, let's go see some place that you're not allowed to go. Like, okay, sure, whatever.
Totally wasn't my plan or anything.
Spoilers.
20-year-old show.
Yeah, I know.
So Kira sneaks Riker onto the Defiant, and underneath the cupboards, snorting potatoes or something, is O'Brien.
Snorting potatoes?
I don't know what the Irish do. He's probably drinking. Hell, I'm drinking. So, you know, that's not racist. We're both drinking, right?
He's doing a line of potato buds.
Anyway, O'Brien pops his head up and he says, "Oh, Riker, so glad to see you." And Riker's like, "Shut the hell up."
You know,
what you did, Ken.
It's totally Ken and Gigabeetle.
Like in an instant, there's like just, you know, just humongous amount of tension and O'Brien doesn't realize it.
Now, is this a reference to something that happened earlier?
No.
No. I think what the intended implication dramatically right now is that Riker's supposed to be pissed at O'Brien for leaving the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. But as we find out later, that's not the reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So O'Brien walks off awkwardly crying. As Kira begins to show off the wonders of the Defiant. The jewel of DS9.
We can kill people with this.
It's a fabulously shiny murder machine. Powered by Romulans.
It's my favorite ship in the universe. I mean, I know it's like a really fanboy thing to say, but Defiant's really, I think, one of my favorite ships just because it is not like any of the others for that very
reason.
It's
brutal and ugly.
And it's not necessarily ugly, but it's there to kill things.
No, it's an ugly ship.
Really?
Compare that to the graceful, smooth lines of the D.
Yeah, I guess that's a good
one. Or the Art Deco styling of, the Excelsior.
Yeah, yeah.
The Defiant
is an ugly-looking
ship. It's all utility.
Yeah,
it's the Millennium Falcon.
Ship. Yeah, it is. Almost in shape. But yeah, you're right.
There's nothing that ship designed for beauty.
The Excelsior is such a nice design.
It is. I love the Excelsior.
Not so much beauty, but it's still kind of awesome.
So, Riker's like, "Oh, well, this is all very impressive here. I wonder how this works. How does this work? This console doesn't work. Would you mind giving me the keys?" And Kira's like, "Tee-hee, okay." So she unlocks the bridge, turns around, and gets phasered in the gut.
So I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question. Where was that phaser? Because, like, here's the thing. That's a normal phaser. If he had one of the little phasers, like, they have pockets on their pants to tuck one of those away where you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really do that with a Type 2.
Well, in fairness, look at it like this. This is superhero time. Where do most weapons in Tokusatsu come from? We don't know.
Right, but there's, like, a tendency to have holsters and things and, you know, continuity with the props.
Well, I'm assuming that O'Brien left it there because he was drunk on potato vodka.
Oh, okay.
I think the bad thing is I do watch so much Tokusatsu, I didn't even question that.
Well, it's just like, you know, by this time in producing Star Trek, they'd given up on the Type 1 phaser because it's too small to be seen clearly on TV.
Right.
So any application that would otherwise call for that ends up being a Type 2 phaser or something.
Like it took three seasons for Error to explain where Ollie stashes his bow, but I never even thought about it.
Well, I don't watch that. I'm disappointed that Riker didn't do like, you know, a judo chop to knock Kira out. I guess probably because Kira's a terrorist fighter and she's probably immune to judo chops by now. She spent several years building up an immunity to them.
I would also like to point out that we're like about a third of the way through the episode, and only now does the actual plot start to happen.
Yeah.
Like, this entire chunk of the episode is just set up for everything else. Where normally you get that in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
The entire first chunk of the episode is fan service of, let's see DS9 and Next Generation characters interact, because the fans will love that.
Yeah, because...
And we do.
They're both on the air at the time.
So, apparently DS9 is retarded and can't detect weapons fire on the Defiant. Because their first clue that something goes wrong is when the ship starts to blow up. Dax says, "Hey, Sisko, Defiant's warp core is breaching. Should I do something about that?" So they phone down there, and Riker answers, saying, "Ship's going to blow up. Release the clamps, and I'll steer it away from here. I'll get you all safe."
Kira can't come to the phone right now. Don't worry about it. She's in the shower.
Well, that's believable if she was with Riker.
You say that as if it wasn't my intent.
So Sisko releases the docking clamps, and Riker thrusts the ship away from the station. And why is it spinning around? Why is it going into warp? Bye! At which point Sisko realizes, that son of a bitch tricked me.
He's like, wait a second. That's not... Oh, shit. My favorite part of the episode, though, then, is when he takes off his sideburns.
Proving that Starfleet can be defeated by glue on facial hair. Now, where in the hell did Riker pull this Maquis crew from?
Maybe they boarded Space Nine separately.
Hiding on DS9 for some reason. I mean, it is, you know, a hub. Them being on DS9 is not necessarily.
It feels like there's a cut scene explaining how they got on the ship.
Well, he beamed them on board.
Did he do that?
Yeah.
He beamed them on board.
So they would have been on DS9.
I missed that then. I suppose I left the room.
Presumably, he beamed them on board from where they were hiding on Deep Space Nine.
Okay, well, that would make sense then. Okay. Forget my point, then.
Which is probably the same place he got to Deep Space Nine from, since, you know...
So, I love when they cut from the commercial to the next scene for the exposition, and we have Dukat, who is just, like, pouring himself a drink. I'm like, yeah, I think you need that for this.
Yes, have your drink of maple syrup.
Yeah, it becomes repetitive to say this, but when every single character shows up in DS9, but Dukat really is the best.
Dukat is amazing. And it's just in that fact where he's like, they're explaining this really kind of dire thing, Odo and Sisko, but he's just going to pour himself and drink from this glass. I'm like...
To be fair, they didn't lead with the important part. It's just like, you know, at some point in the, like, 6 or 7 hours that took place during that commercial break, you know, they called up, hey, Dukat, can you come over here? We need to tell you something. No, just come over. We'll tell you when you get here. So they sit him down. They put a nice bottle of liquor in front of him. And they start telling a story about season 6 of The Next Generation. Or maybe 7, right. I forget.
I forget what season it was, but...
It was one of those last two where things started getting bad. Yeah. I think that's how this was approached. They wanted to get implied a little bit with the liquor. So, you know, he wouldn't, like, break his shirt when he found out what was going on.
And he's like, okay, this is a fun story, but... What?
Why did you call me here?
I like the actual dialogue. This is a you know whatever entertaining story. Why am I listening to it?
It's a funny thing.
Dukat is also an interesting thing because like, he's a persistent, almost always there antagonist.
He's a frenemy.
Yeah, he's a frenemy. But it's
right
like,
for the whole middle chunk of the show. You know, they gave him all this depth and made it like, you know, yeah, he's done bad things. He's not always a bad guy, though.
Yeah, but he's only a bad guy
half of the time. And you don't know which side of the coin he's landed on in any given scene.
Right.
Yeah, but it's just a show of how DS9 does things so much differently than the two shows that precede it, where a villain will show up for an
episode. DS9 is all shades of gray.
Yeah. And, you know,
and a stable characters.
Yeah,
and kind of serialized actually, and it's yeah, this telling approach.
No, but I get Ken's point too. You know, from the start of the series to the end, Dukat is there whenever they need. You know, their recurring bad guy.
Yeah,
who may not always be the bad guy of the episode, but you know.
Yeah.
No, it's just, it is an interesting distinction from Next Generation, especially just that there is that kind of character part of the extended cast.
Right.
And it's what allows DS9 to have a greater range of drama when you have connection to the characters.
Yeah.
Right. Including the antagonist.
Mm-hmm. Antagonists are the most important part of any story.
Yes, exactly. You had a long time to get to know him.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, season 6 happens and...
Well, yes.
Or
a lot of things happen in season 6.
5? Well, anyway, you know, everything flips around in season 5. And...
Yeah.
Oh, well.
5, 6, and 7, considering I watched them like 20 years ago, still kind of still just...
It's one long season.
It is. They kind of just fused together in my head.
Uh-huh. So,
that is why I do need to finish my rewatch here that I abandoned 2 years ago.
Okay, so back in the episode here, Sisko finally spills the beans that, yeah, Thomas Riker kind of, it's a transporter clone in case we haven't made that clear yet.
Right.
We've probably danced around that, but yes, this is not the actual William Riker. It is his clone from a transporter accident.
Where they forgot to delete the original.
Yeah. Right. Whoops.
And somehow they decided that the original was not the real one because
they liked the other one better.
Well, because because the original hadn't had his, you know, updates in systems, firmware updates and all that stuff, you know. It's just like, you know, technology. It's like if you make a backup of something, then you keep going off the backup. You don't go back.
No. They decided that the one on the Enterprise is the real one because it's the one they knew and liked better. That is the long and short of it.
I know. I'm just...
You can see that might rub Thomas Riker the wrong way.
A little bit.
Yeah?
Just a tad.
So...
And I wonder if Sisko looks at that story and goes, man, screw you, Picard.
But it wasn't even his fault. He wasn't even there that day when the accident happened.
Well, yeah, true, but Sisko would probably blame him.
Yeah.
So Sisko tells Dukat that Thomas Riker is still in the Defiant, and he's probably joined up with the McKee. So, sorry about that.
And there's like almost like a split second where you think Dukat's going to do a spit take.
Yeah, there's a total record scratch moment.
I'm not sure if he ever got a chance to drink any of that, actually.
So Dukat immediately realizes what's going down, is that this situation is going to escalate until it's total war. Because I know how my people think, I know how the McKee think, I know what the Federation's going to do. The dominoes are in place, it's all about to come down. And what's cool about Dukat, even though he's a villain, he doesn't want this war to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Wars are messy.
Mm-hmm. Cardassians are political.
Yeah.
So, they agree the only way they can stop Cardassia from freaking the hell out and sending every ship into Federation territory is if Sisko goes with them to Cardassia and organizes the counteroffensive against the Defiant using his super secret inside knowledge.
Because so, I think this is actually the first time they explained that Sisko was involved in building the Defiant.
I think they spelled it out.
Yes, yeah, sure.
When he first brought the ship back, he said that I was at the shipyards when they made it or something like that. But
yeah, but he just kind of showed up with it at the beginning of season 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, the depth of his involvement with making the Defiant happen, this is the first time they really got into that. I think mostly because they needed to have someone who was an expert on the ship from the ground up to go and do this.
Right.
I've never really been clear of why Sisko had the technical expertise to build a starship.
I want to say there is something somewhere in there that he had an interest in starship design in his career, and in the time between the Saratoga being destroyed and going to Deep Space Nine, he actually worked at Utopia Planitia.
Also, you can't really deny that Defiant is really a Sisko kind of ship.
Do you remember the episode of The Simpsons where Homer met his brother Herb who worked at the auto plant?
Yeah.
He let Homer design his own car.
Yeah.
This is the Sisko. It has fins.
Yeah.
Bubble domes.
Yeah. It's true. And guns.
I'll need all the guns.
But, Commander, no. all of them. Your ships aren't using them. I want them.
And then Sisko gets that crazy look in his eyes and starts talking about trebuchets, and the rest of the staff sort of slinks out of the room while he's at the blackboard.
You know, there is that dramatis personae in season one where everybody goes nuts and starts playing out the power struggle, and Sisko spends the whole time building a clock.
Yeah.
Then later in the season, there's the episode where he builds the Bajoran sailboat for space.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I want an episode, or I want there to have been an episode where he spends the whole time building a trebuchet in like one of the holosuites or something. Just because.
Well, you know, you talk about him having had a hand in building it, and then you talk about those things, and that actually kind of...
Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty sure there is something in his background, whether it's, you know, the expanded material or was something that was on screen at some point. Right. You know, he was interested in starship design and worked at the shipyards for a while.
Yeah, but just when you talk about those things, though, that's kind of lead in. I feel like it leads into it at least.
Yeah, it's a consistent thing with his character, if I'm remembering my parts of it right.
Right. Oh, let's say you are.
Yeah. That's the cool thing about Sisko in general, too. Like, you know, he's interested in cooking. He likes engineering stuff. He likes the, you know, ship construction. He's interested in a lot of different things. He's very diversified in a way that Kirk and Picard aren't.
That's true.
Picard likes archaeology and tea and flutes.
He sure does.
Yeah.
Sisko likes cool things like clocks and building starships.
Yeah, but Sisko also likes baseball, so...
Hey, I like baseball-ish.
Sisko doesn't just like baseball. He loves baseball.
Remember last episode we were talking about... was that with Kilby? Yeah, that was with Kilby when I was telling him about the show. We were talking about Star Trek stuff and... talking about how there should have been an episode or a story or something where Sisko goes and organizes a baseball league on Bajor. Deep Space Nine Strike Zone.
We do still have that one baseball episode. That one episode of DS9?
Yeah.
Is that one episode of DS9?
I'm afraid so.
Well,
all right, so. Let's go head on down to Cardassia Prime, where Gul Dukat is giving Sisko a tour of their fabulous office complex.
In the cargo bay.
And here we have our copier, and this is our coffee machine.
Now, which reused set was this?
This is the cargo bay. This is Deep Space Nine's cargo bay.
Yeah.
You can tell by the corridor and the room layout. They just put a bunch of consoles in it.
Lights.
Well, to be fair, all the Federation architecture looks the same, too, so why not Cardassian architecture?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Right. That horrible, inefficient Cardassian architecture.
They like pointy things.
Well, you know...
Asymmetry in buttons and hard-to-reach areas.
Well, you know, points to DS9 as well for, you know, making these settings something that they're going to be using every week in an... week in and week out. Something that wasn't just the same Federation decks.
Yeah.
Mind you, we got that once we got the Defiant, but regardless.
But even the Defiant's interior is very different from any other starship, which is something they laid out when they introduced the Defiant. Yeah. The whole ship's design philosophy is completely different.
Yeah, well, it's still recognizable as this is Federation.
I guess at some point in the future we're going to have to do the Search Part 1 and 2, the opener for Season 3, just because... there is a lot of this material that's in there that's worth talking about.
True. Plus, that was the beginning. That was really the full beginning of the entire...
rest of the series?
The series story. I mean, you got a little bit of it at the end of season two, but...
Uh-huh.
All right, so as Dukat is rounding the water cooler and is about to introduce Sisko to the top secret files, in comes Mrs. Killjoy, the contact for the Obsidian Order. The Cardassian SS.
Yeah, it's not like the Federation has anything like that at all.
Mm. No, not until like season six.
I know that was.
So know, as Miss Thing enters the station, she's like, "So nice to meet you, Sisko. Lock that console down. We're so glad you're here. Put away those files.
Cover that screen."
And Sisko's response to her is just absolutely brilliant. Oh, no, I completely understand. I've done the same thing. I just would have been more subtle about it. Which, saying that to a professional spy, oh snap.
Well, she's not a spy. She's just, you know, an administrator.
Of course. No one, in them sitting in order is a spy. That would be tacky.
Anyway, like, I never took it as, you know, he's lecturing the spy on how to be discreet. I took it more as, I at least have manners. Because I think that's really what that comes down to. I would have done the same thing, but I would have not rubbed it in your face.
Considering it's Cisco, it could be both.
Yeah.
Well, and of course he would assume that there'd be classified stuff. And why wouldn't there be classified stuff that they wouldn't want him to access?
In their central military command structure, yes.
But it's like, Cisco would rub it in somebody's face if it suited it,
yeah. Yeah.
if it was necessary.
Yeah.
So here's where Cisco drops the big bombshell. By the way, he not only just took a heavily armed starship, but it kind of has a cloaking device, too.
That's okay. We weren't going to use it anywhere except this one place. Honest. Really.
And you can see Dukat shit his pants. While the Obsidian Order lady's like going, uh-huh, yeah, I knew that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, like, it's hard to tell exactly what Dukat's reaction is to, because we don't see his reaction until Cornus actually says, oh yeah, we knew all about that. And he seems alarmed that it was known already and no one told him. I assume Cisco told him about it on the trip over.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're going to have to tell your superiors about this. There's a cloaking device on the ship and we need to work on countering that. And, you know, Dukat was all ready to just stand there smugly when the bombshell was dropped, like, I knew that, didn't you?
It's just stealing my thunder.
I like the practicality of the Obsidian Order in this, too. We didn't think one ship with one cloaking device was really that much of a threat. And you know what? It's not.
You want to be honest?
Yeah.
So, since Thomas Riker is not going to uphold the Romulan Treaty, and he's clearly going to use the cloak on this side of the galaxy, Cisco tells him, oh, by the way, you can easily penetrate a Romulan cloak using an anti-proton beam.
An anti-protein beam,
anti-protein beam, too, in case they're like working out a lot.
Uh-huh. Make him lose all that muscle mass at once.
Oh, yeah. It'd be dreadful.
Yeah.
So, does it seem to y'all that in DS9, cloaks were basically worthless? Because they could be defeated. Like, you know, if you glance in the ship's general direction, oh, there it is.
There's an episode a little bit later in the season, too, where, like, using a roundabout method, they detect a cloaked Romulan ship just hanging out. It's unusual circumstances, but yeah, like, it just seems like as time goes on, you know, we're finding more and more ways where these things don't work.
Yeah, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's showing that, you know, technology can't outsmart the cloak as they get more advanced.
Yeah,
however,
you know, science.
Perhaps you
stop
treating the cloak as like, you know, the ultimate in stealth technology when it's pretty flawed now.
Yeah, yeah, and like, considering that after the first time the Defiant's flown, they don't even have like a Romulan observing its use and keeping people away from it when it's not being worked on actively. You know, there's no reason O'Brien couldn't be down there tinkering with it every off hour he has, trying to crack the code.
It's always been my impression that Starfleet knows how to make a cloaking device.
Not how to make it, just like find all the weaknesses to exploit to detect cloaked ships.
Okay.
Since they have access to one anytime they need it, effectively, to do testing with, you know.
Well, maybe O'Brien's accursed Federation honor won't let him do that. He has to play by the rules. Okay, so now that we've figured out that they got a cloak, we know how to penetrate the cloak. Everyone's looking for it. And this is where the episode sort of changes gears again.
Mm-hmm.
Where now it becomes they're playing Command and Conquer in space.
It seems a little Hunt for Red October.
That too, yes.
Yeah.
As Cisco and Gul Dukat stare concernedly at the world's worst video game. They see 2D cutouts of the Defiant head towards strange cutouts of Cardassian symbols and conclude that this warp signature is clearly the Defiant and it's heading straight for us. Or this outpost or whatever.
The Cardassian insignia is the outpost. The little cutouts of Cardassian ships are the ships.
Yes. Well, Sisko quickly realizes it's a trick. A charade. A clever ruse. because that may look like the Defiant, but it doesn't smell like the Defiant. As the fake Defiant lures the Cardassian ships away from the base, the real Defiant comes up and blows it up. Hooray! It's not really clear why they blew up that base, but they did, so good for them.
They're Maquis, it's Cardassian. I mean, do the math.
So, while everyone Cardassia Prime is confused as to what the hell is going on, Kira has been busy blowing up the Defiant using only her bunk bed and her nail file.
Damn! Guy's up in here.
This really calls Starfleet construction quality into serious question.
Does it now?
If you can blow up the entire state-of-the-art warship from, you know, your bed. And the reason she didn't is because she got unlucky. She was trying to commit suicide and blow up the entire ship. Because Kira's hardcore.
Well, I can't argue with that, really.
So, Tom Riker comes down there to figure out what's going on, and he puts out the fire on Kira's shoulder. I assume through a blast of semen.
I know exactly why the ship was designed like this.
Okay.
Because what happens when you need to blow up a ship from when you're locked in a room? Who would think like that?
Kira?
No. Who designed
this? Oh, Sisko would.
Yes. He wanted to be able to make sure he could be able to disable the ship in case he needed to at any point at any time.
So you can probably blow it up for anywhere in the ship.
Yes.
Holy crap. That's frightening and yet very fitting.
Yes, yes.
Carry on. That makes sense to me.
So, while Riker's down there talking to Kira, you know, Kira's giving the third degree, like, why the hell are you with the McKee? You don't have a dog in this fight. And he's like, it's the right thing to do. Glory and honor. Saving people. And Kira's not really buying it.
No.
But proving that Tom Riker is not incredibly stupid, he says, you know what? Let's not leave you locked up alone by yourself. Let's put you in the bridge where we can watch you at all times. That makes a hell of a lot of sense. Because yeah. She would try this again immediately the second he left the room.
She would.
Like, she would not want to wait for the door to close before she'd be back at the panel.
let's hit the wrong one thing last time. Let's see if I can blow it up this time.
Carry the two.
There's an implosion. Goodbye, world.
Back in Cardassia Prime, Gul Dukat is sulking because he's missing his son's 11th birthday.
I actually kind of like this.
I do. On face value, it sounds really stupid, but the way the whole scene plays out, it humanizes him so well.
Uh-huh. The way he delivers the interaction between him and Sisko and the way their actors deliver it, it actually works really well.
Yeah, I mean, like, on paper, it's just, you know, my son's going to hate your people in 20 years because he couldn't go to Six Flags over Cardassia today.
Yeah, well, and you make a joke out of that, but the way he delivers it at the end is like...
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. On paper, that's the way it sounds. Yeah, it's played so real.
Yeah, at the end, he's like, all he's going to remember is that I couldn't be there because a Federation ship was attacking us.
Mm-hmm.
But a Federation ship... piloted by a Federation officer.
Yeah.
But then he caps all that off with, and that is tragic.
Right.
Yeah. And he's not wrong, actually.
No, he's not. That's the whole thing. That's like the whole thing that makes it work. He's delivering this completely true, valid point, and, you know, just doing it with such, like, believable sadness.
And it's like, well, then you realize, like, well, not everybody on Cardassia is necessarily, you know.
I think here's the funny about Dukat is that he could have played those lines differently with sarcasm and, you know, sly, you know, meanings behind all of it if he wanted to, and it still came off perfectly right for Dukat.
Yeah,
saying, yeah. Oh, yeah, that would be just tragic if he thought that. You know, he can make it sound sarcastic and evil, but they chose to make him do it honest, and it, both ways work for the character.
Yeah. Plus, there's also, you know, the kind of neat brief moment of, like, you know, bonding as fathers over the stories of their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, Sisko doesn't get the connection he expects to because Dukat sees the outcome a completely different way. But there's still that thing, you know, like, the two of them are relating to each other on this common ground they share. Which is not, that's not something that happens with them very often.
No.
Well, it still shows the difference of priorities. Sisko's very, you know, close family focused, and Dukat is very much focused on the big picture.
It's just, it, like, this scene is one of the things that really makes this episode for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, season 3 and season 4 do a lot to humanize Dukat, and this is one of the major points early in that process.
It feels like once they hit season 3, they knew that, okay, we have a few more years of this. Here's where we can actually, you know, start making our plays towards things. Because it's... Because, you know, season 1, you just see, okay, is this going to work? Season 2, they lay a seed for a couple of things, but it's still not necessarily, you know, entrenches them to have to, you know, deliver on them just yet. Mm-hmm. Once they start into season 3, though...
Right.
They had a very long-term plan, clearly.
Yeah.
So it works best to, you know, then you start to humanize, for lack of a better word, Dukat. So that way, once you get to the later stuff, well...
I think humanize works here because, like, he stops being the Cardassian stereotype.
Yes.
You know, he stops...
I mean, he's still bad, too, but...
No, but I mean, like, there is more depth to what he is. Right. He, you know, he still expresses the ideals, but it's balanced.
He's not just a supervillain.
Right.
He's not a cardboard cutout.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm getting at. He's made into a more real person through this process.
Which is
rather than just being the personality spec sheet for any given Cardassian.
I laugh, but you're not wrong.
Speaking of character depth, let's jump on over back to the Defiant. Where Kira continues to grill Tom Riker about his motivations. So first she starts by asking, so what is the plan here? Since I'm up here, I'm going to talk to you because otherwise I'm going to be bored. And Tom fills her in like, oh, we got a report that there might be a super secret base somewhere near here, and we want to blow it up. And Kira's like, there might be a base somewhere deep in Cardassia, and that's your target? You're the shittiest terrorist I have ever met.
Tom not wrong.
Momentarily uncomfortable. No, I'm a good terrorist. And Kira shifts into full on awesome mode here. And it's like, she's like, no, I was a terrorist. I blew up women and children and babies. I bathed in their blood. Because I wanted to. I wanted to hurt every Cardassian I met. You passed like 7 orphanages on the way here. What up with that?
They're all
you don't
mine.
Want to be a terrorist. You're trying to be a hero.
And just right.
And Riker's response basically is, nuh-uh.
Damn.
And I just kind of love that Kira is supposed to be the hero of the episode.
Yes.
She's the character, you know, she's a protagonist. You're supposed to look up to her, and she's going on about how, yeah, I was a terrorist. I killed lots of innocent people. You're the bad guy, but you're not a terrorist.
Not a real terrorist. All hipster terrorists on him.
Which is another crazy thing about watching DS9 now.
Yeah.
Is that we've got a whole different connotation on terrorism now, ever since, whatever that event was, I forget.
That this show ended a couple years just before?
What about the remember the 7th of November or whatever the event was? I forget. Anyway, so after that, everything changed. We view terrorism a little bit differently than we did in the late 90s.
Yeah. Mid 90s at this point.
So yeah. Stop making me feel old, Ken. That's unwelcome.
Well, didn't Deep Space Nine like end altogether in 99?
Yeah. 99 or 2000.
That sounds about right.
I think it was 99.
Yeah.
Like I think it started in the fall of 92.
Oh damn.
the fall of 92 is correct then. Because I remember it was 8th grade, so yeah. All right, so back in Cardassia Prime, they've deduced that the Defiant is drawing ships away from this empty sector of space for some reason. It's very confusing because there's nothing at all there. There couldn't be anything there because there's nothing on the records of anything being there. Have they never read fiction before?
Military intelligence, ladies and gentlemen.
And then Coronis is just kind of like, sneak, sneak, sneak.
So Sisko, having half a brain, figures out, well, there's probably something there. We should send a ship over there just in case. And Obsidian Orderly is like, you're not doing that. There's nothing there, but you're not going there. Which point, bitch, please. Why even bother trying to cover this up at this point? Of course, Dukat is kind of upset because he's finding out there's even more things that are being kept from him. So Sisko questions Dukat a little bit, like, you know, so isn't anybody over the Obsidian Order? He's like, well, technically, but not really in practice. Sisko's like, really? That's dumb.
Because the alleged civilian government is so keen on controlling the intelligence division. That just always works so well.
Yeah.
Totally.
So Sisko's like, that's the dumbest government I've ever heard of. And Dukat's like, it's worked for 500 years.
Which is why everybody wears gray.
So they have to make a strategic decision of what to do. And they decide that until they know that this secret system is the target, they really can't afford to spare any ships from actual targets. So let's just wait and see.
That'll work.
Now, since the Defiant has been damaged by Kira's muckety-mucking, basically they're cool as long as they sit still. If they move, they're going to be leaking a trail of piss behind them that will just lead straight up into the engine, and they can blow them up Die Hard 2 style. Well, maybe not blow up, but whatever. Anyway. What goes on now? Help me out.
I don't know. I haven't watched this in like 24 hours.
I was going to say 24 years.
It hasn't been that long.
Only 21. It?
Okay, good. I can deal with that. Sort of.
Okay.
I think it...
Where were we?
Okay.
Here we are. Okay. So, as Riker decides to make a suicide run towards the planet, he is greeted by a ship coming from the planet, which alarms Dukat because that's not one of his ships, and he owns all the ships. And the Obsidian Order isn't allowed to own ships
or
so
anything
what the
else
hell?
I like the implication, like, they can't even have a gun.
So him and Sisko have a quick powwow saying, you know what, you want the Defiant scans of what the hell's going on that planet, and I want my ship back and Kira, and we're really just those two things. So there's some fun little political bargaining back and forth, and Sisko agrees to give over Riker to the Cardassians as long as they don't kill him. They can torture him forever, but don't kill him.
Yeah.
So as Riker continues to barrel his way towards Mystery Planet 9, even more ships start showing up in front of him. So he's got 10 ships chasing him and 5 in front of him. But Ahab gotta go catch his whale. So Dukat and Sisko make their bargain to him and say, hey, you're really going to kill everyone on your ship because you got a hard-on for going out in a blaze of glory like Bon Jovi?
I think Kira asked him that, actually.
Well, it's a combination of everybody. The point is that Tom Riker remembers that he's Starfleet and he's not out there to kill his crew, so he agrees to surrender.
No, killing everybody is Sisko's job.
So he turns the Defiant right around and runs back to the Cardassians chasing him, which are under Gul Dukat's command, and he just nestles right up on top of it and gives it some love kisses, and they pop their shields around it, and the Obsidian Order ships just sort of, oh, okay, well, bye. Never saw us. And they retreat back home.
No communication, no nothing, just... And you had that moment where he's like, Cardassian, where Dukat's like, the Cardassian ship wouldn't fire on another Cardassian ship. It's like, they can't.
They can't.
And, they, and then there's that uncomfortable pause, and they finally turn around, and it's like... You can almost feel like his butt cheeks unclench.
So right before they beam Riker away to spend the rest of his life breaking rocks.
Yeah, sure.
Until they come back to get him.
Totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's not forget
that.
To do that, guys. Yeah. Make a note in your iPhone calendar on your tricorder. Go save Tom.
Who's Tom again?
Paris?
He's in the Delta Quadrant. We're not going that
far.
Yeah,
he got lost at that ship.
A little far.
Oh, I'll delete.
So what exactly had in Next Generation did they do with Tom at the end of whatever episode?
They got him an assignment on a ship somewhere far, far away from the Enterprise, so Will didn't have to ever look at him again.
I kind of love how they hate each other.
Was it at least the same sort of position that he had?
I don't remember.
So. He was still gold uniform. Don't remember that much.
So did he steal somebody's uniform, or did he get promoted?
I don't just painted it.
And no one noticed.
Well, anyway, right before they teleport him off the ship, he makes sure to plant one on Kira for her to remember him by, which she does absolutely nothing to resist, even though she's got a boyfriend. It's Riker. I mean. Can't resist that. Couldn't resist that either.
Consider what we figured she did the night before.
Yeah, but that didn't count. That was on a holodeck.
Oh, it doesn't count.
What happens at Quarks stays at Quarks.
Is that how it works?
Well, that was Defiant.
Yes, it was.
See, the episode title has a double meaning, because Riker was defiant against the Federation as well, stealing the ship named Defiant.
Oh, ho.
That's the type of clever writing you don't get in Voyager.
You don't really get any clever writing on Voyager, though. Except for that one episode.
This is a neat episode.
Yeah.
In that it sort of transmorphs what it's doing. Let's give you 10 minutes of fan service, and then we'll up the stakes, then let's turn it into Hunt for the Red October.
It's doing a lot of different things, and it makes it fun and interesting. Plus, like I was saying before, it's a very unusual like story structure style to spend as much of the time setting up the actual plot of the episode as it does.
Yeah.
Well, it's also probably a good thing because with what the plot was, if they tried to drag it out, it wouldn't have worked very well if they dragged things out.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was stalled.
Yeah.
Also fun is that this episode features, you know, Sisko and Dukat, the primary hero and villain, teaming up against a common foe. And everyone loves those stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, fun thing, at the start of the episode where he's talking to Sisko, Riker's talking to Sisko, and he says Crusher basically pushed him out of the Enterprise's airlock to get him off the ship. This episode aired the same week that Generations debuted in theaters. Whoops!
Well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crusher was like, we'll let Troy drive. It'll be fine.
Oh, no, a planet. I'll run into it.
The one thing she couldn't hit is the one thing she managed to do.
Generations is so wonderfully awful. But yeah, Defiant's like one of the... There's a lot of high points in Season 3. Season 3 is really strong in Deep Space Nine. But, I mean, Defiant really has always stood out to me. You know, Sisko and Dukat team up. There's the whole opening thing with Riker, the whole misdirect. And, you know, there's a lot of different story types going on all at once here, and it really keeps you locked into it.
Mm-hmm. Plus, the reusing of Tom Riker is good too, because that's something interesting. They just left kind of dangling, like, weapons. So there's a clone of you running around.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it is also kind of a swerve, because at first you can feel something's off, but you don't quite know just what it is.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's the other reason for the whole O'Brien thing too, like. Start to realize something's not right.
Right. Or when, you know, he just kind of swerves around Dax's,
That was awkward, but believable. The brand thing is, we get around, like, wait, what? Did I miss something?
It was believable, but then you look back at it and realize, oh.
Yeah, he
was doing
that
because
there.
He didn't want to blow his cover.
Right. Yeah. No, I actually remember watching this episode for the first time, and the O'Brien thing came up, and I'm like, wait, what is that even talking about? Then, you know, 5 minutes later, like, oh, that's why.
I can only assume that Riker was getting down with Keiko, and O'Brien walked in and got mad.
But then wouldn't O'Brien be the one upset at him and not...
Well, Riker couldn't get mad at Will, because, you know, how could you? It's like, yeah, you're Riker, I understand. But Riker was upset because O'Brien ruined the mood.
Oh.
He had probably been turned into a slug or stubbed his toe on something, you know, how O'Brien's luck is.
Maybe it's just a reference to that one time O'Brien transported Will somewhere and his beard didn't go with. Or, like, he just beamed the beard off his face. Huh, I wonder if he could do that. Like, just, you know, somebody's just sitting there, you know, minding their own business, and they feel the tingle of the transporter on their face, and then in the transporter room on the pad, person's beard just appears there.
Okay, unless there's something odd with the search, here's all the Trek movies that are currently on Netflix. The Motion Picture, Generations, Nemesis, and Into Darkness.
So, like, all the... Well, not all the worst ones, but, like, three of the worst ones and one kind of bad.
Yeah, basically.
The ones that were cheapest to acquire the rights to.
Right, because it's the three worst ones and one kind of bad.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's unfortunate.
Isn't it just... Well, I know we're not doing anytime soon.
Are we watching any of those movies?
Right. No movie night for us.
Local libraries might have them. Seriously, I mean, the library.
No, I know you're serious. That's why it's funny.
Yeah, I have seen the. The library here in Coppell, it has, I think, all of the season set DVDs for Next Generations.
I used to get Stargate season sets out of the library here. Which always seemed weird.
Libraries are cool, people. You should go to them.
The only way I would ever watch Into Darkness again is to make somebody else suffer.
Well, then, whenever we have our get-together.
Right.
Right. We can make our listener suffer.
Got it. Yeah. Our listener. Well, do you even have a listener anymore?
Kilby. Hi, Kilby.
Oh, is Kilby listening now?
Yeah, because Kilby actually understands what we're talking about now.
Oh, good.
Oh, God, he can hear what we're saying.
He was so delighted at that first episode.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
I was wondering how he would take it.
Well, one, he's not having to do it himself.
Right. I think, like, as much as Kilby wanted to make a Star Trek podcast, I'm pretty sure he understood he never was going to.
After this many years.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So next week, let's do In the Pale Moonlight.
No, next week we're doing that Voyager episode.
Do we have to?
Remember
I thought we weren't going to be doing that episode of Voyager.
Not that episode of Voyager.
No, we're doing that episode of Voyager, not that episode of Voyager.
Ah.
Capital T.
No, remember, last week we talked about this and agreed we wouldn't do the same series consecutively.
Why'd you have to mention that in the Pale Moonlight, though? Damn it.
Well, and when we do that, we're going to pull Kilby in for it, too, because that's what he's always talking about.
Right.
Though that's just kind of a thing.
Understandably.
Yes, but what are we doing?
Message in a Bottle.
From Voyager?
Yes.
From Sting?
What season is that?
Go to the mailing list.
Six.
Go to the mailing list. I think it's four.
But whatever the case, it's a Doctor episode, isn't it?
Yes, it's the one where they, radio the Doctor home.
Yes, episode 14 of season 4.
What is they messaged back home back in season 4? Lord.
I think that may be an episode I've actually saw on TV.
I saw a lot of Voyager on TV, actually.
I'm sorry you watched an episode of Voyager on TV, Fort Max. Even if it was a Doctor episode.
Oh my god, I forgot who's in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Get ready for the Phil Hartman jokes next week.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. Wait, season 4 started in 95. This would be in 99? So this would be shortly before...
Right, here, Ken, just look at the cast list, and I'll hear you react. Don't say who it is, but I just want to hear your initial reaction.
Okay. Message in a Bottle.
Don't read the cast list out loud now, just...
I'm going. Oh, no.
Well, look
on
the
bright side.
Look on the bright side. Look on the bright side. It's not Carrot Top.
Might be better.
No, what would have been better is if that character had been played by Bashir's actor, like that one episode of Deep Space Nine implied it would be, and...
Yes.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Instead, we got this, because Voyager. Now, of course, we're dancing around it, but for anybody who remembers watching that episode at some point in the last 15 years, you know exactly what we're talking about, so look forward to that next week on that one episode of Star Trek.
Fantastic.